Crisco's Radio Newspaper with Bernardine Flynn. Brought to you by Crisco, the pure all-vegetable shortening. It's digestible. Now, Bernardine Flynn.
Thank you, Durward, and hello, friends. Before Durward Kirby brings us the latest world news, I want to tell you a little story about Sergeant Louis Newbar, who is stationed at Fort Douglas, Utah. Sergeant Newbar, it seems, just doesn't like to be crowded. So, for a long time, he's made it a practice to get up a little earlier than the rest of the soldiers in the barracks so he can shave ahead of the washroom rush. The other morning, he was awakened by noises coming from the squad room. Time to get up, he said to himself, and drowsily threw the covers back and hustled down to shave. He carefully finished the job and then returned to the barracks, for some reason or other not feeling as though he'd had enough sleep. And when he re-entered the barracks, the truth dawned on him. No wonder he felt as though he hadn't slept enough. It was only 1 o'clock in the morning. The noise he'd heard was some of the boys just coming in. And now, Durward, what's the latest world news?
American heavy bombers picked up the air offensive against Western Europe this morning, Byrne. Our flying fortresses blasted targets at Brunswick, one of Germany's major manufacturers of aircraft engines, as well as an important communications center. The fortresses were escorted into their target by formations of American and British fighters. Early reports say there was heavy anti-aircraft fire, but practically no German fighter plane opposition. Our Liberators and other planes also bombed the French invasion coast. In London, Britain's Air Minister, Sir Archibald Sinclair, says that air supremacy over Germany, to blast open the road to Berlin, now lies within the grasp of the Allies. He says that our historic aerial offensive is producing visible, measurable, and progressive results. However, Sinclair cautions that Germany is still capable of striking back in heavy force. General Arnold, the United States Army's air chief, has commended the 15th Air Force in Italy for last week's raids on German aircraft plants. He says that those attacks laid the foundations for final and decisive operations in the future. In Italy, the heaviest artillery duels in 10 days have broken the lull on the Anzio beachhead. British troops have broken up a series of small German attacks, and other Allied troops have mopped up a number of Germans who wriggled through the lines near Cassino. From Russia, Premier Joseph Stalin has sent a message to President Roosevelt predicting that the time is near when the Allies will defeat Hitlerite Germany. On the Russian battlefronts today, the Red Army is racing over the approaches to Pskov and nearing the outskirts of the town itself. In Moscow, a special Russian atrocity commission has made a full report on the brutality of German occupation forces at Kiev. The commission is holding Field Marshal von Manstein, the German commander in southern Russia, responsible for 195,000 murders in the Kiev area. Finland's parliament held a secret session this morning, presumably to discuss chances for an acceptable separate peace with Russia. And there is also a report that Sweden will do its best to provide Finland with food if the Finns get out of the war. On the other side of the world, there is good news in our war against the Japs. First of all, the Navy Department reveals that our submarines have sunk 14 more Japanese merchant vessels. And in New Delhi, Admiral Mountbatten has issued an order of the day to his forces in Burma, saying that their complete victory on the Arakan Front has given the Japanese a crack they will remember. In the Southwest Pacific, American air and naval forces have delivered another heavy blow to Japanese shipping, destroying or damaging 29 Japanese planes, 34 barges, and 2 cargo ships. And the Japs admit that they lack sufficient aircraft to cope with the growing Allied offensive actions. In this hemisphere, in Buenos Aires, the police say that they seized documents of the German Transocean News Agency to prove that it was connected with spy rings in countries bordering Argentina. Also, the Tokyo Radio, by the way, has come forth with one of the best of the war's wisecracks. Unconscious variety, that is. After telling of new American successes, the Jap announcer asked, "What shall we do now?" And then solemnly answered his own question by saying, "Now is the time that the people of Japan should stand up with resolute determination, glaring at the enemy." Well, some Marine probably has the answer to that one with, "Glare ahead, brother, we're coming in anyway." And that's the top of today's world news. Now, Bernardine, I believe you have something of interest for our listeners.
The other day I was talking to a woman who runs a cooking school, and we got to comparing notes, particularly about Crisco. She said she'd just never seen so many dyed-in-the-wool butter users who were being won over to Crisco for cakes.
Well, that wasn't any surprise to you, was it, Fern?
No, but I'm glad I'm not the only one who's noticing it. Really, friends, don't you think butter for cakes got to be kind of a habit? Why, with Crisco, you can make some of the best-tasting cakes you ever put in your mouth. Full of flavor, wonderful texture, and light as a feather. Like the maple walnut cake I made yesterday. You just add chopped walnuts to a regular yellow layer cake batter. And for the frosting, use a boiled icing with maple syrup in it. Anyway, the cake was delicious. As good as any butter cake ever thought of being.
And what about that lighter cake secret of Crisco's, Vern?
Oh, yes. Why, friends, do you know that with Crisco, you can make a lighter cake than with any other shortening, even the most expensive? It's amazing to think a shortening can make that much difference. But you just try a Crisco cake and see. See if you ever tasted a cake quite as light or one that was quite as good.
Now, Bernardine, how about another story?
This is a story about the Red Cross, Durward. Not long ago, Red Cross relief representatives were standing on a dock under a hot African sun and watching a large gray refugee ship move in through the harbor. There were children on board. 300 or 400 young refugees from Greece. There were adults on the ship, too. Many of them ill, others forlorn and bewildered. They had seen their country ruthlessly devastated by the Germans. For most of them, everything they'd ever owned had been lost. They had only the baggage they carried. One very old lady refused the assistance of a young native boy who ran out to help her. She was afraid to let her few pitiful belongings out of her sight. Then there was a little girl, blonde and blue-eyed and not more than 6 years old. She had no baggage at all. All she owned was on her back, a shapeless dress made from an old burlap sack. As the refugees streamed onto the dock, Red Cross workers passed among them, distributing refreshments and clothing and making assignments for temporary homes. The little girl in the burlap was given a new Red Cross dress. She didn't know what to say. She hugged it to her and stared at the Red Cross worker with unbelieving eyes. It had been so long since she'd had anything pretty or clean or new. The next day, though, the Red Cross workers were surprised to see the little girl still wearing her ragged gunny sack dress. "Where's your new dress, dear?" the Red Cross lady asked her. "Did you lose it?" The child was silent for a moment, then she looked up timidly.